But tonight I'm happy to welcome back to the Star Amrita Canning. She's been here before, and I've always enjoyed your talks here at Many Rivers. She is a big supporter of Many Rivers Books and Tea, of which we are very appreciative. Yeah. And tonight she will be talking about one of my favorite subjects, readings from devotional poetry, divine inspiration for joy and awakening. Thank you for coming to Many Rivers.
Thank you so much, Jim. So wonderful to be here, as always. And just want to say thank you all for being here and wanting to stay. And I've been looking at, I was looking at what I wanted to do tonight. And so I have a variety of books, and I'm just going to kind of play it by ear and maybe tell a couple of little stories in through some of them also. The bottom line is really about the mystic's experience of love, of divine love, and how that manifests and how that translates and comes through is as poetry. And I brought a variety of things with me, both Western and Eastern and Mideastern, to really bring home the point that the bottom line is that we are all here together. We are all one. We all know this. And that love, which is at the heart of us, is what binds us all together. It's what runs through all of us together. It is that reality. And devotional poetry, to me, is that place where the heart overflows with that love to bring forth in various ways words that transcend the words themselves and bring forth the energy of that love to touch the other, which doesn't exist because it really is any other. And that's what it goes to point out, is the unity and the oneness. So I kind of put them in a certain order. I could change that, but I think I'll kind of start with the American side here. And one of our greatest poets, one of our greatest Western poets and American poets, was Ralph Waldo Emerson. And I know many of you are familiar with his work. To be honest, I haven't really read him much in a long time. I used to be a huge fan. And he's got one very beautiful one here that I thought I would start with. And I don't have a story about him, because I don't know enough and don't remember enough from his background and his life, except that I do know he had a very profound effect on American literature and American poetry. He was very much into transcendence. And his work in all of its different forms would invariably lead in that direction. So, and that's from my definitely unexpert viewpoint on him. But this poem is called Give All to Love. Give all to love, obey thy heart. Friends, kindred, days, estate, good fame, plans, credit, and the muse, nothing refuse. 'Tis a brave master is love. Let it have scope, follow it utterly. Hope beyond hope, high and more high it dives into noon, with a wing unspent, untold intent. But it is a god, knows its own path and the outlets of the sky. It was never for the mean. It requireth courage stout, souls above doubt, valor unbending. It will reward. They shall return more than they were, and ever ascending. Leave all for love. I like that one, huh? Not that we have set ourselves kind of set our compass and our sails, sitting here in our chairs here in America. Now I want to kind of go in a very different direction and go to Hafiz. And I don't know if many of you are familiar with him. He was a, I think, late 13th century poet, Mideast, Persian. Very, I think it was Meir Baba who talked about what a great mystical poet he was, and that the bottom line of all of his poetry really had to do with the divine beloved. And this is what he experienced and moved with and walked with all the time. And this one I really, really love. And it's called "The Moon Is Also Busy." I bow to God in gratitude, and I find the moon is also busy doing the same. I bow to God in great happiness, and I learn from where the suns and the children and my heart all borrow their light. I bow to the friend in deep reverence and discover a marvelous secret carried in the air. This whole universe is just as blessed and divinely crazed as I, and just as lost in this wonderful holy dance. My dear, after such a long, long journey, God has made another soul free. Now all Hafiz wants to do is open a beautiful tavern where the sacred wine of God's truth, knowledge, and love is forever and ever freely offered to you. Oh, bow to God in gratitude, and someday you will see how the moon is also busy doing the same. The way that he starts with gratitude and the quality of gratitude, and he ends with quality of gratitude. Gratitude is a force. It is an aspect of love, and it is a force that when we embrace gratitude, then the universe gives us even more to be grateful for. Love returns to us even more. And I love this picture, so I had to show you this picture if you haven't seen this one. Isn't that sweet? So now I want to kind of go in a little bit different. None of this is really a different direction. It's just a different flavor. And these are books you don't see around too much anymore. But if anyone is familiar with them, this one is called Unveiled Mysteries. And it was by a man whose spiritual name was Godfrey Ray King. And he was around and very active and transmitting the word, God's grace and love in the 30s. And he worked, he had profound experiences with the Ascended Masters and with Saint Germain. This book is the first one that he wrote, and it's about his magical meeting with Saint Germain on Mount Shasta, and the profound and incredible experiences that unfolded for him in this amazing. He was taking a walk. He was taking a walk on Mount Shasta, in gratitude and appreciation for the beauty of the environment and for God giving this incredible beauty. But he had walked for several miles, and he got really thirsty. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, this man appeared and offered him a cup, offered him a drink from the stream. Only when he took it and he drank it, it wasn't really from the stream. It was really a very different thing. And it was basically, it was an aspect of a form of divine nectar. And it attuned him and brought him into a whole new place where he could be ready for these experiences and journeys that Saint Germain took him on. And part of what happened in all of this over a several-month period is that he had contact with these various different masters, not only from this realm, this planet, the Earth, but from higher realms and dimensions. And there's one in here that I really, really love, and it's by a master who I believe is from Venus. And you can take all of this however you want to take it, but the bottom line is you can look at it as Venus really is a manifestation, a transmitter of love. And that this being, this ascended master, this great master, he his poem is included in here. It's at the bottom, the back. I'm sure, by the way, that if you want to get these books, that I'm sure these guys would be able to find them and order them. And part of why I love this so much is I spent a lot of time in Mount Shasta. I've lived there, and I love it, and it's been a profound vehicle for me of spiritual energy, and I'm very, very grateful for it. I have very amazing experiences up there, as many, many people have. I really recommend, if you haven't gone there yet, go and check it out.
Mount Shasta advertisement.
Didn't intend to do that, but... So this is his poem where he's expressing his love and his devotion, not to a mountain in the sense of earth and dirt and trees and rivers, and all of which are wonderful and incredible and highly charged and beautiful and divine, but really the spirit, the profound spirit that comes through this very incredible vortex. And it's called Glorious Mount Shasta. Shasta, O Mount Shasta, what secrets do you hide? What dwells within that heart of yours? What light does there abide? Beneath your snowy peak so bright, what blessings do you hold? What knowledge do you guard so well from those who seek too bold? I think I hear you speak to me from your pure heights above. I feel and hear your answer now. There's just one way, through love. To him who knows that presence well and lives it to beside, my secrets are an open book from him. I've naught to hide. Learn well that golden key of life. It opens every lock. With it you may fling wide my door, for love there needs to knock. O sons and daughters of earth, who seek more light, learn first love's great command. Pour out its healing golden streams, and in my heart you'll stand. And whether we believe in angels, masters, ascended beings, whatever works for you, we are guided and we are protected. And we are so blessed to have the kind of vortex that Mount Shasta is. And that in itself is love's command. So wonderful to read all this, because there's a level where I could actually, now that I'm starting to get into these, I could get great stories about all this. So sometime maybe I'll have to do a longer thing, so I'm going to focus on a lot of spiritual stories. Now I want to read a little bit from a book by, it's called Shine Like the Sun. And it's by a man named John Panama. And if you do not know who he is a... He's present. He's here. He's in body. He is a dear, dearest friend, guide, teacher, mentor. At once very very humble and playful, and at the same time really bringing forth and really manifesting the presence, and who sees his life here as just purely to serve. And this is something that this is a book. He's written a few. This is one that I really love very much. And this brings a devotional into a very high, very pure state. And you see with each thing that I'm reading, there's a little bit of a different flavor, as I said before. And then we'll find what works for us and what doesn't, and you know. But I love it all, so it all brings me closer to God. Be in the very center of this moment's experience, in the very middle of this perfect diamond consciousness. Here, now, here, now, here, now. In this very perfect moment that is right now, I am existing. Now, he's not speaking as John Panama, the person, but he's speaking of that I am. Presence in each of us that we all are. I am holding you, and I am loving you, and you are holding me and loving me. Letting go, relaxing, together as one, inseparable. Here and now, with no future and no past, with no dreams of the future and no dreams of the past. Here, now, where you already are, relax. Become one with the one. Be here. Here we are merged, inseparable, in contact, in unity. Lift your heart and know I am. Be happy in who you are and know that you are a star. And that always brings me to this. To Krishna. Now, when we're getting going to get into here and here. To me, what is really, to me, this is, we each have our own. But to me, Krishna is my heart. It's not limited to him or anything or anyone, but I have a very special place in my heart for Krishna and in the devotion to him. And in a minute we're going to get into a saint from India who was the epitome of Indian devotional mysticism. And before we do that, we're going to start with it. And this book, which I actually hope you guys at some point would be able to get a hold of. Last time I tried to, couldn't find it. But it's called Sri Krishna, the Darling of Humanity. And part of what I love about this is that what's included in here are stories from the Srimad Bhagavatam, from the Mahabharata, and these are ancient Indian epics, ancient Indian stories that involve Krishna and all of this incredible play that happened around him, which ultimately all had to do with love. And so it tells these stories, but it also gives his life, it gives his teachings, which the most prominent, most well-known is the Bhagavad Gita. It also gives a story of the lives of Buddha and Rama and other avatars or descents of God into human form, human life. And this is kind of, this is the first thing that I want to read from here is taken from the Mahabharata. It is translated by an English author named J.H.B. Masterman. And a lot of what is in here, this was written in the 50s, 40s and 50s, by an Indian gentleman. And but a lot of it, he really has a lot of English, American, and Western authors also quoted in here, and really bridges the gap between East and West, which is very close to my heart and a lot of what I work with. And this is at the end of the story of the Mahabharata, and there's no way I could begin to tell you the whole story. But I will tell you. Another time. But I will tell you a story from it, which has to do with Krishna and has to do with Arjuna. And actually, this little poem in here is something that Arjuna said. And who Arjuna was, this is right after all of this drama that went on for decades and decades and decades. And Krishna, his mission was done, and he left. He left the body. And Arjuna, who was the hero of this great war, the Mahabharata war, and who was the epitome of virtue and bravery, and deep, deep, deep devotee of Krishna's, of God's. So Krishna has left, and Arjuna is ready to. He's like, oh my, what do I do? What's going to happen here? I don't know how to deal with this. And he talked to a couple of different masters at that time, and one was Vyasa, who is supposed to, he's credited with writing the Mahabharata, a few other great of the great epics. And this is with an English translation, and so there's a little bit of a poetical thing to it in English. And he talks, and he prayed, Arjuna prayed with Vyasa, certainly. And then this is what this says. It says, as he prayed, Arjuna met Krishna in spirit and rose up in ecstasy and exclaimed, Krishna lives. Thy terrors now can, O death, no more appall us. Krishna lives. By this we know thou, O grave, canst not enthrall us. Krishna lives. Henceforth is death but the gate of life immortal. This shall calm our trembling when we pass its gloomy portal. Krishna lives, for us he lived. Then alone to Krishna, living pure in heart, may we abide, glory to our Savior giving. Krishna lives. Our hearts know well, not from us his love shall sever. Life, nor death, nor powers of hell part us from his keeping now. Krishna lives. To him the throne high over earth and heaven is given. May we go where he is gone, rest and reign with him in heaven. And so in his deepest despair and darkest gloom, his devotion, his unending, undying love, brought him back into faith and into the reality that is beyond death and beyond separation. And realize that he could never be parted from God. And with him, we move into Mirabai. I don't know if you've all heard about her. And this is a book I actually borrowed from a friend. I have just heard from Jim. Actually, this is available. You can get them mm-hmm. at some point. And I definitely want to get one of this. But it's called The Devotional Poems of Mirabai. And it's by A.J. Alston. Sorry, I don't have any idea who he is. But Mirabai was this amazing, amazing woman who, she was a princess, an Indian princess, who right from her birth was a devotee of gods, was a devotee of her particular aspect was Krishna, was Vishnu. And for the first few years of her life, she had people around her who supported this and gave her love and taught her, and she learned the scriptures, she learned the Vedas, she was supported in all of her spiritual endeavors. And there came a point where her life changed radically. Her parents died, and then the uncle who had taken care of her for years died. And her cousin came into power and first of all forced her to marry, forced her to, did everything he could to force her to give up her devotion, her love for God. And her, I don't know what they would call it at this point, I guess her stepmother, who was the queen, tried to poison her. Her cousin, who was at that point considered her stepfather, put snakes and gifts that were given her to kill her that way. There were several attempts made on her life that probably for anybody else that they would never have gotten past one attempt. And her devotion was so strong and her focus was so strong that she survived all of it. And it meant nothing to her. And this is, she went through a lot of moods, and this partly why I love this book so much is because in devotion, there are a lot of different phases it can go through. And this is the heart. I mean, if you've had a love on the earth, you know that there's the bliss, and then there's a moment of longing when you feel the separation. It goes through many stages, and it does in pure devotional love as well. And she was, she never ever forgot. She never put it off on the side while she did other things. It was a part of everything that she did in life. And she eventually left the palace, walked away from all of it, and she spent the rest of her life doing everything she could to be around holy men. And he didn't have quite so many obvious holy women in those days, but she would find them when she could, but mostly with holy men in satsang, in fellowship of light, in fellowship of truth. And she led a very hard life, but she didn't care. And one time, and I remember this quote from her, I didn't see this in the book, but I've seen it somewhere else, someone was questioning, you could have everything, you have money, you have wealth, you have comfort, you have ease, you have anything that you could ever ask for, and why are you doing this? It's like you're living in the dust and the dirt. And she said, well, my Lord must want me to be here. He must be getting some joy or some reason for me being out here, because this is where he has placed me. This is the only way that I could be in my love for him and not have to deny that or renounce that. And that's the heart and soul of what devotion is, and the heart and soul of the mystics. So she was one of the first truly devotional mystics that we know about. Of course, there's mystic poets. Sorry, certainly not mystics, but mystic poets. People really put that, turn that energy into poetry. So I thought, since it's kind of the epitome of it, these on a little bent right now. I thought I could read some things that she said. Any names that you had in you hear in here are just simply names that refer to God. My eyes are spellbound by the beauty of the angular pose of the Lord. On beholding the beauty of Madan, my eyes drink in the nectar and do not blink. Attracted by the lotus petal beauty of his brows, it is as if they were now entangled in his curling, odorous locks. His body is bent at the waist, his hands curved over the flute. His turban is aslant and his necklace swinging. Mira is thrilled by the beauty of the Lord, of the courtly Girirara, dressed as a dancer. I am utterly charmed by Mohan's beauty, his beautiful body, his lotus petal eyes, his sidelong glances, his gentle smiles. He grazes his cows by the Yamuna River, playing sweetly on his flute. I sacrifice to Girirara, body, mind, wealth, and all. Mira is hugging closely those lotus feet. Mira has been singing the glories of Govinda and is immersed in joy. The king sent a snake in a basket. They came and placed it in Mira's hand. I washed and came to look at it, and behold, it was the black stone of Vishnu. The king sent a cup of poison, but my lord converted it into nectar when I washed my hand and drank. Behold, it was nectar. The king sent a mattress of thorns, saying, "Give that to Mira to sleep upon." When evening came and Mira lay down, behold, it was a bed of flowers. Mira's lord ever stands as her helper and preserves her from dangers. She wanders about recklessly, drunk in adoration, offering herself to Girirara in total sacrifice. Without Hari, I cannot live. My mother-in-law fights with me. My sister-in-law scolds me. The king is permanently in a rage. They have bolted my door and mounted a guard outside it. Why should I abandon my ancient love, inherited from earlier births? Mira's lord is Girirara, Govinda, and she will be satisfied with nothing. And I offer all of these great lovers of God and the words and the energy that they have left for us the deepest gratitude and thanks and blessings. And that may your purity and love ever inspire us and deepen that quality of unconditional love within us. Namaste. So I don't know how we're doing for time.
We have time for more poems or questions or comments.
Any questions or comments? We can do more poems. Or?
I was interested in the flyer that said Walt Whitman.
You know, I have to tell you, I was looking in the last couple of days. I had a specific poem in mind, and I couldn't find it. And then I ran across the one by Ralph Waldo Emerson, and so I brought that in as a substitute. Okay. So I know that was on the flyer, and I have to apologize for that. But he wrote, and there's no way I could do it justice by trying to do it off the top of my head, but he wrote a song called Song of Myself, and it is, so many people know this as it is, but it's such a beautiful, beautiful, powerful poem. And it really is. He was as same as Emerson was. I mean, these were very awake, very conscious people whose lives are really dedicated to that. And I've heard interpretations of that poem as, you know, kind of like talking about the ego, and you know what a great guy, and, you know, and it's really about God. It's really about his recognition of that spirit and presence within him. Oh, so I do apologize for that. I saw that, you know, I should not have put that on the flyer. So, but next time, I'll keep looking for that one and see if I can find it. Anyone, anything else?
Do you know about when Mira was alive?
Mira was, they estimate that she was born around 1398 A.D.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And she was a contemporary of, oh my goodness, that's terrible, of, it's getting late in the day, of a great, great lover of Krishna, who was actually an incarnation, if you can accept those things, of Krishna, Chaitanya, Lord Chaitanya, and she was a contemporary of his, and there is a level where they, because of the times and the mores and morals of the times and the customs, they actually never connected, and they couldn't. There was a lot of separation. And at the same time, there were points, and I've read stories of how they talked about each other, rarely, but they did talk about each other and in acknowledgement, and they were so, both so connected in the inner, and they just served by both of them being there. Well, I personally feel were incarnations of Radha and Krishna, and that they served. We were able to serve kind of almost like different parts of the population of that they were working with in India. And it was a very beautiful thing. So, yeah. She was so wonderful. She was so wonderful. It's just, you know, when you focus, my experience is when you focus on the thing of devotional poetry or mystical poetry is that it is an outgrowth of the transcendence, of the transcendent experience. So, as I said earlier, it's not just the words. The words are, they're just, it's the energy in those words that let those words come forth and form. And it's such a great blessing, such a beautiful thing. But if you want, I can read more. I'll pull some more if you have time.
I'm not so familiar with Saint Germain. Is there anything written by him?
Saint Germain is actually Saint Germain. Oh, this is a fun one. Saint Germain is now an ascended master. He actually lived in Europe. You'll hear a lot of different estimates, but for a very, very, very long time, he supposed to have been part of the French Revolution. Supposedly he was over here during the American Revolution. He went into the 1800s, into the late 1800s, and lived for a few hundred years, and really was kind of behind the scenes in many key moments in history, such as, you know, as I said, the American Revolution, the French Revolution, which were, you know, French Revolution went a little bit off course, but because it got so, you know, we all know the story, so it just got a little bit too much out there. But he was a key factor kind of behind the scenes. You're not going to read much about him in history books, but you can find references to him, to the Comte de Saint-Germain, in different French. You're not going to find so much in this country. But as far as books about him, there is a series. There's another one. It's called The Magic Presence, which is kind of the takeoff where this one ends and kind of takes off from there. And he is a huge supporter of the true mission of what this country is, that the freedom that this country is about is not the freedom to have cars and houses and lots of money, but it's really about spiritual freedom. And, you know, the other is cool too, but it's really, the foundation is really about spiritual freedom. And he works with a lot of different things, but a lot of what he works with is violet fire. And violet fire is a very purifying energy. It's a very strong transformative energy. It's the violet ray, you know, coming from higher dimensions. And these books give these stories about him. They also give talks that he has given. And there's an organization called the I Am Foundation, which was started by Godfrey Ray King and is really around the transmissions and the energy of Saint Germain. But it's not like all of these things that I brought forth, I can't attest to as far as Hafiz, but for most of them, there's really the sense of, it's not like this is the way and the only way, or this is the only incarnation of God, or this is the only, but it's really, these are really a much more eclectic, which to me is how I believe the masters are, and God beings on the highest levels. It's really isn't about some one thing is the only way. It's God is the only way, and God's taken many forms and manifested in many ways, and God's here in this room and is in each and every one of us. And so I honor all masters and all teachers and all bringers of the light, whether they have bodies still or they've left them long ago, or maybe they'll come back again, or their presence is still here. And so after, if you want to talk, I can help you. Maybe I'll talk with Jim about how he can get these. I don't know if you've ever carried these. You have. Well, see, there we go. They're all set. It used to be when this transmission was first done in the 30s through Godfrey Ray King, they used to be very, very closed. And I remember in the 70s, I went to Shasta for the first time, and I met a woman up there named Pearl who knew Godfrey. She's really very, very advanced, though. She has since passed on. But she used to be involved in their movement, and then after Godfrey passed on or ascended, she kind of continued doing what was happening, and she would channel, and she wouldn't use that word, but the bottom line is she would channel these masters and Saint Germain to come through. And so she used to order books through the I Am Foundation, where no one was allowed to have them who were not a member of the foundation. She used to order these books, and she'd just give them out to people. And she must have, in her lifetime, ordered thousands of those books. And somewhere, I think it might have been in the 80s, early 80s, they finally gave up, and they finally got the message. This is something that should be given and released to anybody who wanted it, and that they weren't going to, you know, they couldn't do harm. Someone got it who didn't believe, or whatever, they couldn't do harm to it, but that it would plant seeds. And so now these are available to anybody who wants to get them. So I'm glad that you ordered them. That's so great. Very wonderful.
The Star Wars movies as well. I heard a name of Pearl.
Pearl?
Yeah.
I never heard that about Pearl. I've heard it about some of the other I Am people, but I hadn't heard that about Pearl. I don't know. But she was a saint. She was an amazing, amazing person, and she, I feel very blessed to have spent time with her, worked with her. I feel very blessed to have been able to do that. And it was a very wonderful experience. So it's about these books, and I'm so glad you're going to be here. Anybody else? Comments? Questions? I have no idea, no concept of time right now. So how are we doing?
A couple more poems, a couple more questions.
Sounds great. Any more questions?
About Krishna.
Any more stories about Krishna?
It's a whole other hour,
at least. Whole other lifetime. Does that sound good to everybody? Krishna. Now we all have the things and beings we work for. See, that's why God's so unlimited. You know, everybody gets what they need. I'd bring the Bhagavad Gita along because I kind of saw that as something different. Let's see if we've got something here. I mean, I can tell you a lot of stories, but I kind of was feeling people to. Krishna was one of Krishna's things that he was very playful. Very, very playful. And he was also, he could be not playful also. But, Well, you know, I've used that before when I've done talks here, and this was going to be poems and poetry, so I thought I would do something a little different. Okay, this is a translation. This is perfect. This is a translation of a part of the Bhagavad Gita, and it's by an English person, Western person, I don't know, probably English, G.W. Doane. Thou art the way. To thee alone from birth and death we flee. Thou art the truth. Thy word alone true wisdom can impart. Thou only canst inform the mind and purify the heart. Thou art the life. The rending tomb proclaims thy conquering arm. And those who put their trust in thee, nor death nor hell shall have. Thou art the way, the truth, the life. Grant us that way to know, that truth to keep, that life to win, whose joys eternal flow. I keep coming back to this. Krishna lives, Krishna lives, Krishna. Merciful hearted, when thou camest as Bodh, albeit it was written in the scripture so, thou bathed our altars, be no more imbrued with blood of victims. Keshav, bending low. That mean to you? And then we're going to ask questions. What does that mean to you? You hear from us.
Do it again. I was just distracted.
That's okay. Merciful hearted, when thou camest as Bodh, although it was written in the scripture so, thou bathest our altars, be no more imbrued with blood of victims. Keshav, Krishna, bending low. To me, what this, and this is Sir Edwin Arnold, and he was a great, he's English lord. And he took a lot of the Indian scriptures and translated them. And he always put his kind of his poetical kind of spin on it. And to me, what he's really saying here is it's the reminder. It's not our surrender, our bending low to God, the inner, the outer, whatever is your path, is really what lets God in. Not sacrifice, not rituals, not whatever the things that we do, which can be great and can have their place and can be perfect and can give a lot. But it's so much more than that. It's really, to me, it's just really bringing God in. Really bringing God into our hearts. Really embracing our own devotion. Our own love for God. Our own longing for God. Some of the things that are in here, and I hesitated to read this because sometimes it can be a little much for people. But one of the things that's in here, they kind of divided this up into sections of you know, songs of love, humble petition. But there's one part that's in praise of the Lord. Because she, in India, they call it bhav. It's different aspects. It's different moods. And one of them, you know, love's aspirations, my soul support. What I was looking for, which I found here before. It's longing. Oh well. But there's a similar thing which he has is testing. And here she uses the word one is sham, which is it's the dark one, it's an aspect of I'm going to say God just to make it simple. But it's an aspect of God. It's an aspect of Krishna and Vishnu. And Madana, same thing. So any, like I say, any names in here, it's just God. I am dyed deep in the love of Shyam. My king, dyed deep in the love of Shyam. I danced before the holy men beating the drum. People think I am mad over Madana. That love of Shyam has driven me silly. The king sent me a cup of poison which I gulped down without even a look. Mira's Lord is the divine Giridhara. His love is true, birth after birth. Oh my king, why did you bear enmity against me? Why did you play the prickly cactus? Now I have left the palace and its lofty towers. I no longer live in your city. I have renounced antimony and tillic, and donned the ochre robe. Mira's Lord is the divine Giridhara. He turned the poison into nectar. I donned anklets and danced. The people said Mira is mad. My mother-in-law declared that I had ruined the family's reputation. The king sent me a cup of poison, which I drank with a smile. I have offered body and mind to the feet of Hari and will drink the nectar of his holy sight. My Lord, to thee will I go for refuge. Oh, Hari, thou art the support of my life. I have no other refuge but thee in all the three worlds. Though I have searched the whole universe, nothing pleases me but thou. Says Mira, O Lord, I am thy slave. Do not forget me. Deign to favor me, O Hari, with the gift of a single glance. My gaze is ever fixed on thee. But thine is withdrawn.
Hard indeed must be thy heart. All my hopes are fixed. I'm receiving a single glance. I have no other refuge whatever. I am standing before thee in supplication, and behold, the dawn has come. Mira's Lord is Hari the Indestructible. To him would she sacrifice her life. I do not know how to meet my Lord. He came into my courtyard and went, and I only know that I missed him. I spent days in search, scanning the road, night and day. Hari came into my courtyard, but wretched that I am, I was asleep. The pain of absence burns my bewildered heart and gives me no rest. O servant Mira, whoso once meets Lal Girihara should never let go. My thirsty eyes are longing for his sight. Whole days have I passed in scanning the road. The pain in my eyes is great. A bird has been singing from a branch, and its song has pierced me deeply. The elders speak bitter words and crack jokes at my expense. But Mira is sold into Hari's hands. His forever, for birth upon birth. Thank you all. Thank you for being here and giving me a great excuse to read all of this. It's so very wonderful.
Thank you. That was wonderful. Yeah.